in memory of the slain Kent State four only because they were white. Said Montserrat, we cannot have a viable school system if about half our students do not believe that we care about all of them. More news after this.
The name of the game is escape, and it's played with horse, goofballs, bennies, and acid. Strange names for dangerous drugs that can send your mind right out of this world. The idea is, get high enough on stimulants or low enough on sedatives, and reality, along with its problems, fades from the scene. Or does it? The harsh reality is that drug abuse can lead to drug dependence. And a drug-dependent person only succeeds in exchanging his day-to-day problems for chronic anxiety, nightmarish anguish, and on occasion, death. A drug-induced fantasy or flight into oblivion never changed anything for the better. Nobody yet has found any advantage in being out of his mind. A public service announcement from the American Medical Association.
President Nixon said today that his budget surplus has vanished and the government will be operating in the red this year and the next. In reaction to the president's announcement today, the stock market sank. The Dow Jones average lost more than 11 points. We'll have the full stock market report at the end of the broadcast. The United States Attorney General, in a speech written by the White House, said that price and wage controls are out of the question. Instead, Mr. Nixon proposed a stiff tax on the lead used in gasoline. He said that the deficit in the federal budget is caused by a drop in revenue, not a rise in spending. And the president said that if government spending appears, as he put it, to exceed the potential yield of the tax system, he might ask for a general tax increase in January. Mr. Nixon announced the expected budget surpluses have not materialized, and deficits totaling $3.1 billion are expected in the next two fiscal years. But despite the continuing inflation, the administration is not planning other revenue boosts immediately. Budget Director Robert Mayo said that a larger tax boost would not be appropriate because of increased unemployment. A report on the likely economic impact of any Vietnam peace concludes that the benefits to the civilian economy might be non-existent. The report says that the war in Vietnam is declining at such a gradual rate that any money saved would be consumed in other areas of the budget, including defense. American forces in Cambodia have found still another huge communist rice cache. Today's find is estimated at more than 100 tons, brings the total rice recovered to nearly 2,700 tons, or enough to feed about 10,000 enemy soldiers for a year. The rice is being distributed to Cambodian refugees and Vietnamese families. To date, Allied forces claim to have killed more than 8,000 North Vietnamese and Viet Cong in the 19-day Cambodian operation. Some sources dispute the body count, saying that much of it was done by air observers who can provide no more than an estimate. United States casualties in Cambodia total 155 dead and 632 wounded. Meanwhile, a communist source in Phnom Penh said that the Allied offensive has severely upset Hanoi's timetable for any victory in Indochina. The United Nations Security Council today labeled last week's Israeli invasion of southern Lebanon a premeditated military action, and by a vote of 11-0 with 4 abstentions, the Security Council condemned Israel for violating its obligations under the UN Charter. The United States was one of the abstentions. Israel had contended that its sole aim was to destroy Arab guerrilla bases in Lebanon from which attacks were launched on Israeli frontier villages. Israeli planes returned to the Suez Canal to attack Egyptian positions under cover of night. Earlier, Egypt had accused Israel of bombing civilian targets along the canal. Israel said that its planes hit only military targets. Labor mediator Theodore Keel said today that negotiations in New York City's two-month-old newspaper dispute remain at an impasse, but he declined to speculate on whether a strike is inevitable. Keel, who was head of the mediation panel trying to settle the dispute between New York City's 4 major daily newspapers and 10 separate unions, said, at some point, obviously, someone or something has to give. Speaking to newsmen before addressing the second annual collective bargaining forum in New York, Keel said that the main stumbling block in the dispute is money. In his speech at the luncheon meeting of the forum, Keel said that the current economic climate of the country was hampering efforts to reach a settlement in the newspaper talks. He claimed that the continuing rise in the cost of living, while the economy has seemingly taken a downturn, has produced what he called the most difficult negotiating climate he has seen in his 30 years of labor mediation. Mayor Lindsay said today that he's convinced that the leaders of the pro-Nixon administration rally at City Hall Park, scheduled for tomorrow, are determined to keep it peaceful. It's expected that the rally, like other demonstrations by construction workers and their supporters in the last 10 days, will have a distinct anti-Lindsay tinge. But the mayor told a news conference, and we quote, "I think everybody has a right to speak his piece, pro or con, providing, of course, that this is done peacefully." The mayor revealed that he had met at City Hall yesterday with Peter Brennan, the president of the Building Construction Trades Council, which is coordinating plans for the rally and which is expected to bring tens of thousands of construction workers and others to City Hall Park. The mayor said, "I think I'm satisfied that the police preparations are good. I'm also satisfied that Brennan's people are doing their part." News of the federal budget deficit put the stock market on the skids today as prices dropped sharply in moderate trading. Sales on the New York Exchange, 9,480,000 shares on 1,564 issues traded. 1,062 declined, 252 advanced, 250 issues were unchanged. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed 690.40, or down 11.41. Transportation issues were down 2.49, utilities down 0.67. The New York Exchange Index closed with a loss of 65 cents. American Exchange sales totaled 2,412,000 shares on 1,003 issues traded. 641 declined, 155 advanced, 207 issues were unchanged. The Amex Index was down 23 cents. Weather forecast for New York City and vicinity: gradual clearing tonight, the lows 50 to 55. Mostly clear, seasonably warm tomorrow, the high 70 to 75. Here tomorrow night, the lows again 50 to 55. Partly cloudy and cooler on Thursday, the highs in the 60s. Current temperature 57 degrees, humidity 90%. Winds are calm, barometer 30.07 inches and rising. These highlights in the news at this hour: New York City landlords meeting denounces city's proposed rent control revisions. New Jersey's Governor Cahill says that he was told that President Nixon will send no additional troops to Vietnam even if Vietnamization program fails. United States forces in Cambodia find another huge enemy rice cache. That's the latest from the WOR newsroom. Lester Smith reporting. Hear news as it happens over WOR. I'll be back with another 15 minutes of news at 11 o'clock. Coming up in a moment, Gene Shepard.
At finest supermarkets, they're fussy about the way they trim their meats. Extra fat? Never. They leave on just enough to make it cook to perfection and not an ounce more. You get full value for every penny you spend, and you get the best eating ever. Be fussy. Shop finest supermarkets. This is WOR New York, 710 on your dial.
Machine. He presses the major number one button. He turns up the controls. The runway is rushing towards him. The cosmos is spinning. And once again, the captain is ready to hand out the goods. Bring it up big there, Matt, please. After all, we're men of total media. How are you doing in your media these days, friends? You know, there's a little town in Pennsylvania called Media. And, yes, it's still embarrassed about it. It was long before McLuhan it was named Media. There was a general in the Civil War, Alfonso J. Media, who lost a battle. That's a long story. Yes, that was one of the first battles that the media lost, as a matter of fact. By the way, speaking of media, tonight's program is in excessively bad taste because it deals with an embarrassing problem that all of us have faced from time to time. And, hey, listen, did I invent a movie with Peter Sellers in my mind? Did I invent a movie when Peter Sellers was in the slam? He was in the prison. He was in the jug. And he was with two other guys, and they were in the cell, and they lived this fantastic life of ease in jail. Remember, they had their breakfast every morning. They were cooking up eggs, and they had a radio and everything. What was the name of that? Well, I was reminded of that. We're getting the dope here. Peter, it was a very funny movie, tremendously funny movie, and the jailer worked for them. I remember the jailer used to come and help them out and ask him if he could have a little bacon with their breakfast. Yeah, two-way stretch. If you ever see that, yeah, two-way stretch. Well, now, you know, so many movies that we see out of Britain, we think that they're just being funny. You know, we have a tendency to believe this is a great comedy, but it doesn't have much to do with life. And I'm sitting in the barber chair, and I go to the barber chair once in a while to sit. You see, I don't go to get a haircut. I just go to sit. I love to sit in barber chair. You can just sit there. Have you noticed, by the way, how many mafia guys seem to be involved in barber chairs all the time? What is with the mafia and the barbers? Who was it? There was one recently who was served as papers. Costello? Yeah, he was sitting in a barber chair. Another one got it here a couple of years ago. He's sitting in the barber chair. Bah! Yeah. By the way, I was right around the corner when that one happened. Woo! Yeah, I was in the next block. It was over here on 6th Avenue, 7th Avenue there. It was in that hotel there. And, oh, boy, that was exciting. But, just like the movies. Nevertheless, that movie, Two Way Stretch, is so much like this little piece I read while I was sitting in the barber chair. I almost flipped. Listen to this. See, I think many comedies that come out of different countries seem just like fantasies to us. And we don't recognize they're based on reality in that country. For example, did you ever see this great movie called I'm All Right, Jack? Well, now, that happens to be an absolute, correct, beautifully delineated picture of British labor conditions. Oh, yeah, anybody's had anything with this? Oh, they have more problems. Listen to this one. Poole, England, Honey, governor of Dorchester Prison, reports that security in the prison has been tightened after a prisoner walked out through the main gate with visitors. The Home Office, well, you didn't hear the rest of it. The Home Office, by the way, isn't that a great title? The Home Office. I mean, only the British would name a place the Home Office. This is it. This is the center of the world. The Home Office said the man had re-entered the prison shortly afterward and had been disciplined by the governor. The man had been committed by the Bournemouth Magistrates Court on a burglary charge. He was upset. He didn't like being in the slam. When his sister, a part-time barmaid, who often serves Andy Capp, went to see him, he was very fed up. He didn't like it in jail, the prisoner's mother reported. And we quote again, he walked right out behind Sue, past five or six guards, he didn't say anything. Outside, she made him go back. She said, you get right back in there. He went in, rang the visitor's bell like anyone else. His sister told him to go back, and he says, okay, and he went back, rang the bell, they let him in. And now he's in the slam. Now, I don't know what they do, you know, when they're giving him discipline in a jail where you can get away with that. What is discipline? They take away your popsicles for 2 days, maybe, something like that. You know, who knows? But nevertheless, I'm walking down the street today. This is very, 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 very nervous-making, I tell you. I'm walking down the street and I go past a school. Now, when you see a school, generally, and there's a lot of kids out in front of the school, you know, you expect a lot of signs, right? And a lot, you know, a lot of squad cars all around, people yelling, all that. No, there was a bunch of kids standing around the school, and I had forgotten what time of the year it was. And you know, sometimes when you live in a big city, you just don't remember those things, you know. The city has no, you know, it has no, like, no sex. It has nothing else. No time of the year, nothing. And New York is just like that. It's gray, miserable city. And I'm walking along down the street on 6th Avenue, a whole bunch of kids. And so I'm wading knee-deep in these kids, and I finally ask one of them, I says, what's going on? Would you please, Matt, if you will, my little razzmatazz music there, please. It had not occurred to me what time of year it was. And I immediately felt this sickness down deep in my gut because of what was happening at school. It's the good old summer time. It's just around the corner again. Yes, sirree, it's a festival all the way. Hold it. Thank you, Matt. That's very good. You know what was happening in that school? Senior pictures. Senior pictures. Class pictures. How many of you remember getting your class pictures taken? Do you remember it, Matt? Did they do it at school? Well, I want to tell you what happened with my class pictures. It led to the most fantastic fight in my house. I remember this fight and the disappointment. See, I'm a senior, you know. Everybody has his, you know, you're a senior, you're a big-time guy. And the last year of your school year, you know, in the last year of high school, is practically nothing but, quote, activities. You know how it is at school. And, right from the very beginning, you're a senior. See, the first thing you do in the fall is you order your senior class ring. Well, we had a choice of two types of senior class rings. You could get one that had a, you know, it was a great big ring, you know, the great big thing. It looked like you'd graduated from the Merchant Marine Academy or something, you know, a big thing. It had eagles and birds, and it had the laurel leaves and Victor things all over. Oh, yes, we selected it. See, somebody in the class, I don't know who was on the committee, but they selected it. And you had your choice that you could either get a pin, a class pin, which looked a little bit it looked like some bird had dropped something on you, is what it looked. It looked like a little cluster of strange little things. Yeah, it really did. It looked like, from a distance, you felt like saying to the guy, hey, Fred, you know, look on your shoulder there, your lapel, something happened. And so nobody bought the class pin. It had a little chain on it, you know, with a year on all that. And it was really a drag. So you had your choice of the pin or the ring. So I got, that ring, did that cause an uproar? That we went into class, see, everybody said that you can order your class ring this week. And you have to come down to the office, and they have a thing where they can, tell you what size your ring is. It looks like a long, sort of a long silver rod that has numbers on it. And so everybody goes down there to order their class rings, and we're going to pay dough for this. It was, I think, about $22 or something like that. And everybody's all excited that the committee has ordered the class ring, and they have decided what we're going to get. So we go down, we get our fingers all measured, and everybody's all excited to see what the class ring, until it arrived. The ring arrived about 3 weeks later, and everybody's excited. That morning, they hand them out in homeroom. And, the blessing of everything, we'll get their class rings today. Oh, wow. And so, sure enough, Miss Snyder says, all of you who are seniors, come on up. When I call your name out, you have your class rings, and you have to sign a receipt for it, see? So she's calling the names out. Friday, my name comes out, and I go up, and I get my ring. You had your choice of a black background, like an onyx background, or a fake ruby background, dark red, see? So I had picked the black one. So I get up to the front there, and I take my little box of the senior ring, and I sit down. I open it up. It's got cotton in it, all excited. This is going to be the great ring I'm going to have. You know, you always see older guys walking around with rings from the classes, the schools they go to, and this is an official thing. So I get my ring, and I put it on, and I notice it was kind of tight. You see, it was kind of strangely tight, so I force it over my knuckle. I finally get it on. There it was, this great, big, beautiful ring. It's glowing. It's just fantastic. And all day long, see, I'm blowing on it. I'm rubbing it on my sleeve. And all the other kids, you know, Schwartz and all the rest of the crowd, you know, they got their rings. And a couple of guys got the red ones. And we're standing there looking at it. You know, oh, hey, look at it. I never noticed this. You notice it's got the look. Look on the side there. It's got little golden grapes. I wonder what that's for. Huh, grapes hanging out. And look at the leaves on the side there. And, gee, what does this funny letter say there? And we were all excited about this thing. And then I went home. See, I show it to my mother. $22 worth of ring. It's a big deal. And I've gotten this ring for my birthday. See, my mother says, look, you can get a class ring now. That's your birthday gift. And she gave me the money for it. And this is a whole big... Not only was it a class ring, it was a birthday gift, see? So I put the ring on. And I get home, and I'm standing there with it, very excited with it. Oh, boy. My mother says, now, be careful of the ring. She says, you know what ruins rings? And I said, what? What? First ring I ever had, you know, real ring. I said, what? What, Ma? She says, you got to be careful. Soap ruins rings. Now, I don't know why people think soap ruins rings. You heard that. You've seen people always take their ring off when they wash. Whole business of soap ruins rings, see? So I take my ring, see, and I'm going to wash my hands. And I try to take it off, see, and I struggle like mad to take it off. I finally get it off. And the ring, oh, I can't tell you. I cannot tell you, even now I get mad when I think of it. It was such a terrible moment. I'm in the jar, and see? Now, the ring was tight. Well, you know how tough it is to get a ring off. So I put spit on my finger, and I put soap and all. So I want to take care of this ring. Remember this. I had just gotten it this afternoon. It was bright and shiny. It was my class ring. Working it off. Oh, boy, is it tight. I guess that's the way they should be, though. You know, you don't want to lose it. Echo. Echo. Watch now. It won't come off. I'll give you the cue. Won't come off. So, and my kid brother walks in, see? He says, what are you doing? I said, what does it look like, stupid? Which is our usual form of discussion. I said, blow your nose, will you? Quit dripping it on my feet, will you? He said, what are you doing? I said, I'm trying to get my ring off. I couldn't get this damn ring off. It was stuck right on this, right here. I'm showing you. For those of you who are here in the studio, it was this knuckle that was giving me the business. Right here, this crummy knuckle. So my kid brother, friendly Randy, says, here, let me pull it. I said, okay, Randy, you hold on to this and pull it. See, and I put soap on it. And we're both pulling. He's pulling. I'm pushing. Now, see. Whap! It comes off and... Down the sink it goes. I could hear it going ding, 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 ding. Down the drain. Down the drain. My class ring. The first day I've got it, that's a true story, down the drain. I want you to remember that. Well, I let out a holler. My kid brother took off, and I want to tell you this. He knew, this is WOR New York. He knew that if, you know, it was the end of it, you know. He knew that he was in trouble. He took off, and he wasn't seen for 2 days. My ring went down the drain, and I stood there. Down the sink, you know, the sink, gone. Have you ever lost anything down the sink? Well, the first feeling I had was it's got to be stuck down there in the bottom, you know where that little hook is, that thing? So I says, don't touch anything, don't touch anything. Now, there's only one person who could deal with our sink. That was my old man. My old man was the sink and John expert. In fact, he used to love to fix Johns and sinks. He'd go around everybody, you know. You need a sink fix? He'd love it. You know, he'd love to take the bottom of sinks off because you'd find all this groovy stuff in there. So he says, I said, don't touch anything. Don't, my ring. Oh. My mother comes rushing. What's the matter? I said, my ring is in the sink. Randy threw it in the sink. She says, Randy threw it in the sink. Yeah, it's in the sink. Oh, God, what am I going to do? She says, don't touch anything. Wait till your dad gets home. So we waited an hour. Nobody could go into the John to turn the water or anything. We waited. The old man comes home. And, you know, he slams the back door open. He says, I'm home, I'm home. My mother says, quick, take off your coat, quick.
Put on your overalls, quick. You got to work on the sink. It's that damn thing again. Don't tell me it again.
He used to get mad because we had plumbing that was apparently made out of tinfoil in our house, because every 10 minutes, something was running over. I mean, if something wasn't stopped up, it was running over. So he'd get,
don't tell me tonight I'm going bowling that again.
She says, no. Quick, Jeannie's class ring went into the sink.
Oh.
Well, this is the kind of job he liked, you know, rescuing something. So he gets all his tools out. He gets the whole business. He climbs out of the sink, and he's got the monkey wrench. He takes off the pipe. He says, careful now. Don't touch anything. Got to be very careful. We got all the water's turned off now in the basement. See, he takes a sink. And now he lifts that new pipe, that trap. They call it the trap. He gets the trap. He says, now, careful, careful. And he has a paper spread out. He's got the Chicago Tribune spread out on the John floor. See, and he dumps it. Old piece of Life Boy soap falls out. 17 pounds of my mother's hair comes out. Nothing. No class ring. It is not caught in the trap. Dead silence in the John. The old man says, I know where it is. It must have gone all the way down.
It's gone all the way down. Where is it?
It's gone. I could see my kid brother hiding under the day bed, these two beady red eyes, looking out. It was one of the blackest days of my life. No class ring. But there is a happy ending to it, sort of. Somewhere, someplace, probably 15 miles out in Lake Michigan now, buried among the silt and the sludge from the Procter & Gamble plant, all the crud from the steel mills, is my class ring. 1 week later, everybody in the senior class who bought a class ring developed a fantastic rash from the crummy rings that our senior class ring committee had selected. The rash went from their ring finger all the way on up between their shoulder blades and down the middle of their back. And then came accompanied with blisters. It was a scandal, but I don't care. That didn't help me any. I would love to have had that rash. I was the only one in the senior class that didn't break out in a rash. I was also the only one in the senior class that didn't have a ring when I graduated. So I just want to tell you, friends, this is the year of the trauma. For the good old summertime, they are graduating again. The odds are 16 to 12. They didn't learn a damn thing in the 8 years before. It doesn't matter anyway. You can major today in whatever you care to measure in. Demonstrations, yelling and hollering graffiti in the good old summertime. Bring it up there, big. Story. That ain't all, man. That ain't all. No, sir. Are you ready? Dr. Pepper is on his way.
And now a special message from Dr. Pepper. The first Dr. Pepper truck has reached New York. We now switch you to our man on the street, Saul Weinberg, for a first-hand report.
Yes, it's true. The first Dr. Pepper truck has indeed arrived. The mood here is one of great excitement. Excuse me, please. People are cheering and screaming, old and young alike. Watch the table, please. Have united in one great gesture of welcome. I'm trying to get near the truck. Welcome to New York.
How do you like it, kid?
Gee, Eddie, it's everything you said it would be.
Would you like to say something to our audience? How does it feel to be the first truck to make it through?
Speaking for the kid and myself, we're kind of proud.
Hey, Mom, look, I made it!
Get out!
Well, there you have it. Some people said they'd never make it, but Dr. Pepper is in New York.
Hi, where have you been?
Chevron Island. You know the Chevron service station. I got a set of Atlas Plycron tires.
Why Atlas?
Well, I get up to 100% more mileage than I got with my original tires. You see, they have tough fiberglass belts, and Atlas tires are safer, too, because they resist cuts and punctures better, even at high speed.
Wow, you got yourself some great tire, man.
That's not all I got on Chevron Island. How do you like my tan?
And a cast of thousands. Indeed. That's among your favorite commercials, right, Matt? yeah, well, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, after all, everybody's got to earn a living, you know, that's the kind of... Have you seen these wild... Speaking of commercials, have you seen these wild commercials that come on late at night where you see this guy, see, he looks like he's been dipped in some kind of strange hair oil or something, and he comes on and he says, Matt, a little echo chamber would help. Have you always wanted to be in television and radio? Have you wanted to make commercials? Have you seen that the outfit that's recruiting guys for crowd scenes for commercials? Have you seen that? I'm telling you, everybody wants to be in showbiz. Everyone wants to be in the crowd. And, you know what commercial really irritates me? I have my own favorite irritating commercials. Some kind of commercial really bugs me. Not the commercial itself, but the way it's done. This, and now here is Tom O'Malley, comedian, cleverly disguised as... Ooh, that's bonus balonus. And you notice how those people all seem to, oddly enough, mention all the copy points? They never say the obvious, like he says, now why are you buying Shell? He never says, well, because the Shell station is right around the corner and I was running out of gas. Hey, is this Shell? Is that what you're selling here? You know, what's the average guy? No, they always say things like, I get great mileage. I get great mileage, and it has a platform mate in it, and the great mileage. And oh, don't worry about it. They don't know who what show it around. It doesn't make any difference, man. Come on. You worry. You're a worry bird. Now, let's speaking of worry birds here, and talking about fantastic commercials, this is one. I want you to listen real carefully. No, that other one over there. Sneak it in there. No, wait. Maybe we'll reverse the order here, Matt. You're right. No, don't you go. Let me handle it, honey. Okay. Here, hit the button. Right.
How soon is the baby in mother's womb a human being? What does he do while waiting to be born? Would you believe somersaulting? How soon a cure for cancer? How drugs work? Can you fall in love at 40? 80? Story of Life, Part 1. Now on sale at your local magazine counter gives you the facts. Week after week, Story of Life examines and explores your whole body. Glands, brain, emotions, the shape of your personality, erotic thoughts and passions. Story of Life, Part 1. Week after week explores and reveals the fascinating facts of life today. Story of Life in magazine format is published each week and is packed with full-color photographs and illustrations. Over a period of time, your weekly magazines build into 7 volumes of medical fact and opinion. Story of Life is exciting reading and information for all the family. Be sure to get your first copy of Story of Life, Part 1, from your local magazine counter today. Only 75 cents per copy.
Get Story of Life and find out what makes you tick.
Yeah, man is probably the most self-conscious creature that's ever strode across the globe. Hey, Tinny, now what makes you tick? Now you got a whole book on it. Read about your erotic thoughts. Man. But, that's only part of the story. Hey, speaking of a part of the story, though, these kids with a senior picture, I don't even want... You notice that I'm sort of skirting the issue here tonight about that picture? Because that picture, that senior picture, led to quite possibly one of the most traumatic, nasty situations that I ever ran into as a kid, as an emerging kid. Of course, it's all part of the whole ego. You know, it's part of the ego development thing. I'm at the beginning of the year, everybody was all excited, you know, about the yearbook. You know, there's two kinds of kids that go to school. In fact, there's two kinds of people all the way through life. There are these amorphous, strange, remote people, and you know about them, Matt, who are always on the committees. The yearbook committee, daily newspaper editor committee, the ring committee. They're the people who do this stuff. Now, these kids, you know, the kids that put together the yearbook, I was not even allowed in the yearbook office. I mean, they had an office, and all these, you know, these very official kids from these rich families were always in there cutting stuff out and pasting it on papers, you know, pictures of themselves and their friends and the whole bit. And, you had to be elected at least an all-state guard to get a mention in the yearbook if you weren't in that crowd. And so they had pictures of their own little clubs, you know, and they took the pictures themselves with their own cameras. And we had this yearbook. See, like all high schools have a yearbook, or at least everyone I ever knew. And everybody was proud of our yearbook. We always won these prizes. And every year you had to buy it. See, it cost, I think, around $7 for the yearbook. Came in the beautiful covers. And by the way, we had a good name for our yearbook in this day of, ecology. The name of our yearbook, The Dunes. That's a nice name. And it was named after the dunes. And so the whole biggest thing, one of the biggest things of your senior year was the senior picture. Well, there was a famous photographer in town. Every town has a famous photographer. He was like the local Bach Rock, see? And he's got the contract to do these class pictures. So everybody's all excited about it. And they did it alphabetically. Everything in that damn school was done alphabetically. They started right out at the beginning, you know, with the A's, like Eileen Akers, Esther Jane Albury, Jack Allen, all those guys. And, we had a Jack Allen. We had 17 Jack Allens, as a matter of fact. Our senior graduating class, if you're curious, had 796 people. So we had, you know, big sprinkling. All the way down to the bottom, we had a guy named Zinsmeister, Chester Wisniewski. They were way at the end of the book. And so we started out 1 week taking the senior pictures. Every day, everybody's all excited. And there'd be long lines of kids outside of one of the rooms where they had set it up as a studio. Well, my day came on a Tuesday, just like any other Tuesday, except I was there. And it turned out bad. Oh, did it turn out bad. That day that I was to get my picture taken, you know, some people just naturally groove with taking their picture. You have to have a certain kind of ego. Some people are nothing until somebody turns a camera on them. The minute somebody turns a camera on them, their ego just flowers like some kind of a fantastic geranium. Teeth all over the place. Their cheekbones suddenly get very high and narrow. They all look like Hamlet and stuff. Then there's other people who in their real life look great, and they don't have that kind of ego. The minute you turn a camera on them, they look like a human fire plug or a toad, or they get this sort of dumb look, kind of a stiff look. Well, we're all waiting in line that day, and there's been an argument at home, see, about what I should wear for the senior picture. But it was mostly taken care of because there was a rule in our class that all the girls, they could wear what they wanted, girls. But all the boys had to wear a white coat. Don't ask me why. You know, one of these summer formal things? Had to wear a white coat. That was some smart idea of one of the people in the senior class picture committee, you see. We had nothing to do with that. So they had these coats in there. So you didn't have a choice. You wore this crummy white coat, but you had your choice of tie. You could wear whatever tie you wanted. So there was a big argument. You had to wear a tie. That was another rule. So there was a big argument at home about ties, and finally I was allowed to wear my father's favorite tie, which he won in bowling. And it was a great tie. I remember it was a dark red tie, and it had thousands of tiny cross bowling pins on it, believe it or not, that he had won in bowling. Well, that was the best tie in the whole house. It was a beautiful tie. And so for about 3 hours that morning, I'm tying this tie. My old man has helped me. I finally get the tie on with my white shirt. And my mother insists, and oh, when I think back on it, now I really get bugged. The more I think of it, she insisted the night before that I go down to Ray's Barbershop, because it's my senior picture, you know, and get my hair cut. Well, Ray was the kind of barber that operates on the lathe principle. What he would do simply would be to put you in the chair and spin it fast. And, you know, he'd work on you like from the ears up, you know, and he, with the clippers, I want to tell you, he used to leave a little tiny thing right at the top. It looked like you were wearing some kind of a yarmulke made out of hair, you know, right on the top of your head. So, anyway, I went to this, and I couldn't get out of it. My mother was yelling and hollering, so I finally went down and got my hair cut. And now I'm wearing my old man's bowling tie, and I'm, you know, I'm supposed to be looking good for the senior picture. Well, it was late in the afternoon. It was after the seventh period that we were supposed to go in to get our pictures taken. And the line had formed. They were taking us all alphabetically, all the S's and the P's and the R's, the Resniks and the Reznicekis and the Wasnovskis and the Pozlowskis and Frank Paswinski, all the rabble, you see, the whole rabble is at the end of the alphabet. And obviously, the very official people usually are up in the front, you know, they have the... In fact, I've noticed that almost every official person, you know, the guys that really make it, their names begin with A and B and stuff. So by the end of the week, this photographer now has been shooting kids all day long. Now, he probably started out with the spark of inspiration. You know, right away, he's feeling good. First day, you know, with the cameras. And he was running downhill. And here we are, about 712th in a line of 794 people. And so he's just taking them like he's turning out popcorn. You know, pow, pow, pow. Well, we wait in line. Yeah, this is your senior class. Forever, you're going to be in amber like a fly, a dead fly. You can't escape it. Well, I'm waiting outside the room now, and about three guys are ahead of me. And, of course, the girls would go in, and when the girls would go in, they'd be in there like a half an hour. This guy had a thing on chicks, see. Girls would be in there about a half an hour, and you'd hear giggling and cooing, and, you know, he'd woo. He was one of these method photographers. He'd woo the girls. He'd say, he'd turn the lights down. You'd see, he'd hear him working with the Venetian blinds, and then you'd hear a little giggling in there. Now, come on, baby. Oh, wow, you know. And pretty soon the girl would come out. She's all flushed. And you don't know what went on, more than pictures or something. But anyways, they'd come out. They'd look great. In fact, if you look at one of our senior yearbooks, you'll find all the girls look like Julie Christie. And all the boys look like barber poles. And so my turn came. This is the first bad moment that I had with a camera. Up to that time, cameras had just been stuff at the picnic, you know, where Aunt Em is taking a picture in her Instamatic. Well, so the room is dark. I remember vividly. Do you remember getting your picture taken, Matt? You actually remember the room? The room was kind of dark. He had about three assistants. Here was a girl over there writing your name down in the book so that you got the right negatives and all that stuff. And when you went in, you were supposed to tell them right away how many you want, how many copies you want, in addition to the one that's going in the book. Now, if you're really big, you know, you say, I want a dozen copies, and they charge you so much a dozen. Or you could choose different kinds of folders. You could choose whether or not they're black and white or sepia tone, you know, that sickening sepia tone. So I walk in. The guy says, how many do you want? How many want? I didn't prepare for this. He says, well, how many pictures do you want? Do you want three copies? Do you want a dozen copies? Oh, I'll have a dozen. Little did I realize it was $48. I'll have a dozen. Oh, all right. Yes, sir. Very good. A dozen. Your name is Sherp? J. Sherp? No. Shepherd. Oh, yes. S-H-E-P-P-P-P-E-A-R-R-D-L. No, I says it's Shepherd. All my life I've been trying to explain to people that the word Shepherd is spelled like you spell the word Shepherd. You know, there are no two P's. I am not an astronaut. I am not an ex-osteopath who was accused of murdering his wife. I have nothing to do with any of those people. And I've never even met any of them. My name is Shepherd. So the guy says, Shepherd. All right, spell it. I says, S, you're right, H-H-E. He says, what was that? I said, E. Oh, he said, oh, yes, two E's. E-E. No, I said, one E. I go through this every day, right now, today. I says, one E. You asked me to repeat it. I said, one E. He says, okay, S-H-E-E. No, one! All right, don't raise your voice. S-H. P. Yes. P. P. H. E. R. D. Oh, okay. S. H. E. P. P. E. R. D. I said, okay. That's my name. You write it down. Whatever you like. It's okay. So how about your first name? I says, Gene. J-E-A-N. Oh, Gene. E-U-G-E-N-E. It is not Eugene. I do not know any Eugenes. My name is not Eugene. Now, you just said your name is Gene. What's the matter? I said, it is Gene. Gene. That's all. Gene. J-E-A-N. Ha! Well, that's a girl's name. Ha! I said, it is not a girl's name. By the way, I was a practicing tackle on a football team, and at the time weighed 722 pounds. I said, I'm not a girl. It is J-E-A-N. J-E-A-N. With that, he looks over at his assistant and says, oh, la-dee-da, a girl's. Ha! Genie, ha! Genie, how are you, Genie? Oh, wow. Hi, Gene. Ha, that's a joke. Hi, Gene. I said, oh, right, it's Gene, J-E-A-N. Okay. J-E-A-N-N-E. So let me write it for you. By that time, I'm sweating. My collar's folding up at the ends. It's got two little... My collars look like the ends of skis now. They're bending up at the ends, see, and the sweat's running down my back. I'm bugged. This, every time I have... It always goes through this. So, all right, I get through with the name. I've ordered a dozen pictures. I have ordered, incidentally, the pebble finished folder instead of the smooth finished folder. I have the pebble finished folder. And he says, do you want it black or sepia? I said, what is sepia? Oh, he says, it's a beautiful rich brown. I said, oh, yeah, yeah, that's what I want. Which added another $7 to the pictures. So, he stamps it. He says, here's your receipt. You'll pay when you get your pictures. Thank you very much. Now walk into the next room, and there's a mirror over there if you want to comb your hair. Well, I go over, and I didn't have any hair to comb, you know, because I'd been raised the night before. I had this little flat thing that looked like I was wearing a beanie. See, they'd taken the propeller off, so I got a beanie now on the top of my head, so I try to comb it, you know, trying to get the back up like this. And try. You know, I had a beautiful DA before I went to see Ray. Now I got this thing, a little rag on the top. So I'm fluffing it up, trying to get the gunk out of it, you know, the lucky tiger and all that. And I hear this guy in the next room, he keeps saying, come on, hurry up, we ain't got all day. Now let's go, you got 298 kids to go. What are you doing? All right, all right. All right, already. So I go on, he says, sit down over there, kid. What's your name? I said, Shepard, Gene Shepard. He said, okay, all right, Shepard. You got it? He says, okay, Shepard, Jay, right. Okay, sit down, kid. And I sit down, poof, it goes like that. He says, okay, you're done. I says, what, is that it? He says, come on, let's go. Bring in the next one, Fred. And in comes some girl, and he says, oh, sit down. Well, let's see. And I'm out in the hall. It's the end of it. That's it. Not quite. 1 week later, the negatives came back with the proofs. You know those pink proofs you get? Friends, I just want to say this. Have you ever wondered how Babbitt looked as a kid? I looked like I looked like I was a junior insurance man who was made out of cottage cheese. It was the worst picture I ever saw. It was a bad picture. And my mother loved it. She says, what a nice, that's the most wonderful picture that I've ever seen of you. And she says, look at that. Isn't that wonderful? And the old man is sitting there. He wants to go. He says, yes, yes, that's great. That's wonderful. Yeah, yeah, great. We fought for 3 days over that picture. And since my mother was paying $52 for him, it was finally decided that my mother's pictures would go through. And since time immemorial, whenever I see that yearbook, it's like I'm frozen, I'm a gnat somewhere. Give me a little of that mysterious music. Mysterious music. A gnat forever frozen in a sea of amber. Unmoving. Dumb. Crummy looking. You got to start all over. And tonight, I am announcing an important new movement. Right beginning tonight, it is year one. None of the rest of them count. It is now year one. Repeat that to yourself. This is year one. Year one. And how many of you went to the most recent Washington protest march about a week ago? Did you see those fantastic year one posters that they were handing out and everybody was walking around with? A majestic poster that the more you look at it, the more wild, swirling, fantastic images you see, the more great things begin to develop until finally you're involved in a great swirling vortex of reality, truth, beauty, and total fantasy. Year one. Bum, ba-dum, bum. Bum! It is year one, Echo Chamber Matt. Year one. One. So tonight, we tell you, no more Echo Chamber. That's all right, just one. That's right. You did it good. That was very good. What's the matter? What's the matter, Matt? Oh, poor Matt, he gets so nervous. Tonight, we are announcing to you, you can have a fantastic year one poster. Heaven, earth, rock, Beatles, sound, time, all come together in this fantastic painting, which is, I think is a groovy thing, painted by R. Herbst. Send $2 in check or money order. Do it soon, now. Check or money order to year one. 460 West 34th Street, New York, New York. And, of course, their postal number is 10001. I repeat, $2, year one, 460 West 34th Street, New York, New York. Year one. And they'll send your dough back if you're not completely mind-blown, friends, right out of this universe. And I mean it. It is groovy. Bring it up, Matt. Shepard goes tap dancing out with a great poster with his picture on it from the senior yearbook, looking like a truncated insurance man about to get out and sell you some flim-flam mutual funds, a cockamamie insurance company. Dum-da-dum-bum.